Hello everyone, welcome to edition 196 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast, recorded right here in Norfolk, UK, and brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to the game by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. My name is sports journalist and sometime F1 correspondent Michael Bailey, and we are here to discuss all the key F1 headlines of the last week or so. Coming up, has science kicked off F1's Game of Thrones? Who's sinning over the halo? And bring on the fresh meat. That's all fairly abstract there. As you know by now, this is the first of our bite-sized podcasts this week, as we bring you three pods in 3 days. Once you've digested this, we'll be back with our Singapore Grand Prix preview and our Marina Bay predictions podcasts. Joining me on the pod for tonight's F1 fun are F1 connoisseur and Damon Hill fan Richard Baxter.
Good evening.
And two times Beckles kart champion, thankfully he wasn't with us for the NR F1 Grand Prix, Carl Cumbers.
Hello.
How are we doing, gents? We both well? Richard, how is your back, Rich, after the NRF1 Grand Prix karting fun?
It's okay. The egg that was on my back has now vanished.
I mean, karting is brilliant, but it does sort of mess your body up a bit.
Yeah, but it's amazing how many muscles you use to turn a steering wheel when it's just a steering column and tyre strapped onto the road. No power steering malarkey like we have in our road cars. So
much fun, though. Kyle, you know all about karting. And you haven't seen how we got on, I suppose, have you? Have you seen any of the times or anything? No.
Nothing at all, really. So looking forward to that. And hopefully maybe if there's one next year, I'll be able to come along.
Yeah, so. We'll be adding the ballast to you, most definitely. So we are planning on having a podcast of some sort. Not quite sure what that'll be. And video highlights and a proper package of what went on at Ella Park in the NRF1 Grand Prix just last Sunday. What a brilliant occasion it was. We're hoping to do it again next year. And also, maybe, if you keep an eye on our Patreon page, which is going to get a bit of a revamp over the rest of the year, patreon.com/NRF1, patreon.com. Maybe you out there can make the trip and come and join us for the NRF1 Grand Prix next year. We will see. Right, anyway, we're not here to talk about the NRF1 Grand Prix, as good as it was. We're here to talk about Formula One. And as always, in this first podcast of the week, we try and dissect the news. Now, most of this is going to be the rumour news rather than the confirmed news, but just because it's a rumour doesn't mean that it won't be confirmed eventually, or maybe very soon. Saints Dominoes, shall we start with this? This has actually been stated as fact in Autosport by Dieter Renken, excellent guy. In fact, the first time I covered the British Grand Prix, I was sat next to Dieter, lovely guy. I probably didn't fully appreciate who I was sitting next to, although we had great conversations. Obviously, I knew what he did, but I now keep a very close eye on all his stuff. Extremely wise in terms of the Formula One business world and all that sort of stuff. He has stated as fact, in theory, that Carlos Sainz has signed a deal to race with Renault from next season, possibly sooner, the story intimates. That is effectively to sweeten Renault's early departure from Toro Rosso, so Honda can replace them from next season. Meanwhile, that should in turn allow McLaren to pick up Renault engines, because as we expect, McLaren will be divorcing from Honda as soon as they can pluck up the courage to announce it. And as I said, there's a possibility that Carlos Sainz will actually be in a Renault car before the end of this season, if the situation allows itself and can arise. Big news this, really. Or maybe we're just saying that because there haven't been any bigger driver changes. But what do you reckon, Carl?
Well, it's big news because I don't think people were expecting the Carlos Sainz to be involved in this whole engine swap between Toro Rosso and Honda. Great move for him. He obviously wanted to get out of Red Bull because he didn't see much of a future there. There's only so many years you can be at Toro Rosso. It's the works team. Probably a bit more cash for him. Renault are building up the team again, and it'll be good to see him alongside the Hulk. It's also a really good deal for Renault because I think they seem to have got compensation in the way of science, but all I can see is that just instead of sending their engines all the way down to Italy, they got to send them just down to Woking, and I can't see the huge difference they have. And they've got another team, a big team, McLaren, sort of promoting the Renault brand as well. So, win-win for Renault.
Yeah, it obviously they were in the position of strength because it seemed like everyone wanted them to do things, and it was like, okay, well, what's it going to cost you to make us do it? Which is how they seem to have made the most of it, and clearly a Carlos Sainz Nico Hülkenberg pairing, assuming that that's what it would be next season, would be pretty tasty as well. It's difficult for Carlos, and because really Red Bull's such a settled lineup as it looks at the moment, there is nowhere to go in that team, which is probably why the Toro Rosso lineup's been actually fairly hasn't it this year, because the development has stopped with them rather than stopping with the proper team.
Yeah, I mean, Toro Rosso, they've had some good races this year, but other times both drivers seem to be kind of similar to Force India. They want to be on the same bit of tarmac. As it looks, I mean, the Renault this year to the Toro Rosso, you can say for Sainz it's a bit of a sideways move. But I think looking forward, the way that Renault have come from last year to this season, they've improved quite a lot, it seems anyway. So if they can take another step forward next year, they could be fighting up there more in the points. That would be a good move for him. And of course, if one of the Red Bull guys decides they want to leave, I suppose you could still have that space to step into. Because with Kvyat, although I want to say nice things because he's still young and he had a tough time from Red Bull, I can't really see him getting anywhere back into that team. He's just kind of on the grid at the minute. So, could we see two new drivers at Toro Rosso next year?
That's also interesting with Sainz leaving. Is he completely cutting all ties with Red Bull? Because end of next year, Max Verstappen, say he has another bad year of reliability stuff, he might say, I'm off to Ferrari or Mercedes or wherever he wants to go. Then that seat opens up, but then Red Bull are looking, going, well, if Kvyat's still there, is he any good? And then obviously maybe if Gasly comes in, there's no real obvious promotion from the Red Bull sort of stable. So interesting to see if they've completely cut ties or they can maybe, if they've still maybe got an option on him in the coming years.
We'll touch on Gasly as well, because I think there's a suggestion that we might get to see Pierre Gasly before the season ends, possibly. And I guess what we've got with Red Bull and Toro Rosso can take on Honda engines. Red Bull can then look at that and go, do we want Honda engines or do we want to actually keep Tag Heuer watch Renault engines? And I guess if they keep Renault engines, that could still allow Carlos to move back to Red Bull, possibly. So in that way, he's maybe keeping his ties going too. We're having before we started, a little conversation about Honda and McLaren, the divorce that hasn't been confirmed yet, we've all kind of assumed is going to happen. I mean, we've spoken a bit about Toro Rosso having Honda engines, and that just seems like a bit of an experiment, probably, and they're just Toro Rosso going, it, we've got nothing to lose, let's see what happens. But probably McLaren divorcing from Honda this side of the Japanese Grand Prix could actually be a bit of an issue, given Honda would probably much rather that happened after Formula One has been to Suzuka.
Yeah, you'd hope for their sake, and for the fans in Japan, that they do have someone they can still support this year, engine wise anyway, with Honda. It's going to be interesting because, of course, Alonso last year, he seemed to wait until he got to Japan to say how rubbish the Honda engine was on the team radio the whole race.
Really make a point here. It's
So you think, is he going to kind of do the same thing again? You just accidentally let slip after P1 or P2 in Japan. Oh yeah, we're not using your engines next year. Just to really offend him in front of their home crowd. But
as if Fernando would do that. He might do. Do we think it's likely that Carlos Sainz will make an early switch? Will actually do that? Is that something that would be quite unusual, a driver to move between two teams before the end of the season?
Is it the compensation Renault are getting as part of that? Yeah, it seems strange, but I suppose if the deal's going to go through next year, then why not bring it in? And then Red Bull or Toro Rosso probably want to have a look at Pierre Gasly ahead of next year. Could we see... Well, that's a bit too early for that, isn't it? I was going to say Japanese driver at Toro Rosso end of the season, or maybe next year.
You can pronounce it.
Matsushita? Is it Matsushita?
We need the Springles. The suggestion that he might get a go before the end of the season, but I don't know if that's pre-practice or which. And we'll get onto that in a minute, actually. But there also a suggestion, McLaren may well want to build their own engines from 2021, which is obviously a long way away, but it's kind of, I don't know, to me it makes sense McLaren should be building their own engines. It's something they've never done before, but given they now produce cars, you'd think you could probably produce your own engine if you wanted. Yeah. And there never seems to be an issue with finances for McLaren either, so go for it.
Yeah, I mean, reading years and years ago they were thinking about doing it, and but yeah, surprised they haven't gone down that route. I've seen talk, I think, years ago of buying the BMW. I think there's an engine department somewhere in Germany.
God, that would have saved them a lot of hassle now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't done it, but I suppose they looked into it and Honda came in and said, well, we'll give you a large amount of money and, you know, and we'll relive the glorious 80s, and it all sounded good at the time, but yeah, it's been a wasted 3 years.
Yeah, I think that is something that really should be done more often, is the teams produce their own engines, because it could add real competitiveness. Because really, we've got, I want to say effectively, you've got three engine suppliers on the grid, in Mercedes, Ferrari, and Renault. Because Honda, exactly at the minute, it's just kind of bolts they've put together in the hope that it's going to last for an hour and a half. You could arguably say the same about Renault, but they cover quite a lot of teams as well. But it's incredible to think of all the manufacturers in the world, there's only two who have got competitive Formula One engines.
It is, exactly. It's been a major issue for the sport as well. I remember now on Twitter, Carl, you've already put in a prediction that Carlos Sainz will score more points than Nico Hülkenberg next season. Good work. I've noted that down in 2018. Also, McLaren have said they're going to keep hold of Lando Norris rather than let him go into a junior team or, you know, another Formula One team and try the ropes. Which kind of ties into this other idea that Ross Brawn has been on about wanting more F2 drivers to take part in Friday practices, and feels that it's really important Formula One has that sort of bridge, I guess, and which kind of, I guess, factors into Norris's future.
Yeah, I think he's going to do F2 next year, seems to be the plan. I think he's starting to run away with the FIA F3 championship, and as a British fan, it's pretty exciting to see what he can do. But yeah, sort of leads to maybe if there are more teams on the grid, then there's more chances open. And if, you know, looks like Sauber are now officially going to be Ferrari's junior team, could have Leclerc in there next year. And it's a shame, like Mercedes and the Manor deal that sort of looked like it was going to go ahead, and then unfortunately Manor pulled out. And where you can put like maybe George Russell in a couple of years' time, and the whole sort of Toro Rosso model, I think would be really good for Formula One, because we can give the youngsters a chance. And if you had 26, 24 cars available, then you can give these F2 champions a go. Like over the previous years, I mean, obviously Gasly won it. Where are we now? 16. There's now really got a chance, possibly, of getting in. It's a shame that you win the series underneath, and then your career sort of stops, because you can't continue in F2, because that's a rule that if you win, you can't continue. So,
if you look at Julian Palmer, I mean, what year was he champion? It was quite a few years ago. He won F2, and then he only got his chance in F1 last year.
Yeah, so and he went on and on about how he couldn't get that drive off the back of winning effectively the championship that was supposed to set him up for that.
Davide Valsecchi did podium interviews, and he was 2013-12 GP2 champion.
The man with the strongest punch. I mentioned that, I can't remember which episode it is, but look back, it's in there. Man has the strongest punch. I have that on good authority. Lots of strands that come out of that, Carl, and we'll probably touch on a couple of other themes as we go along through the rest of the pod. I did just also at this point want to touch on Sergio Perez, because he is reportedly closing in on his Force India deal for 2018, which I suppose is interesting timing, given that, you know, what's been going on at that team in the last few weeks. And although it was much quieter at Monza, that's basically because they both got a massive for what happened at Spa. And I hadn't really twigged. I mean, I guess it's these classic multi-year contracts in Formula One. You can sign a multi-year contract, but in reality, you still need to sign something that gets you into that seat next year. So, I mean, it's obviously, I always think it's interesting when these things are put out in advance, because you always wonder, okay, well, why is that out there? Is someone wondering where he could maybe go next year, or what options there are? And it's an interesting one with Sergio, because Esteban Ocon has had a pretty good run on him this year.
Yeah, they've been really closely matched. I mean, what I was going back to the last race where Ocon started third, wasn't it, in Monza. I thought him and Lance Stroll as well, that both of them together, second and third off the grid, I thought they were just brilliant. They were so, it was just, so mature in their driving, because you could have been a bit hot-headed and gone in trying to take the lead and for that 1 second of glory to be leading the race and lost it. But no, you got valuable points for your team. I thought they both did really well. And I can't see that they'd drop Ocon, though, because he's such a strong driver. And if they did, who are they going to get in to replace him who's going to be as competitive? And where would Ocon go?
I mean, they wouldn't want to drop Ocon because quite clearly he's super talented and you'd really want to keep hold of him. And now, I mean, he's got years on Sergio Perez and there's nothing between them.
I think Perez, I sort of read rumours that he was quite keen on the Renault seat, and until this whole engine thing, he was possibly on his way. So that's kind of ruined his...
Which would also tie in with the timing, of course.
Yes, and now he's going, well, I've got to go back to the Force India. But it's...
I always wanted to be there, don't worry, it's fine, thanks.
Is there any team on the grid? I think it's probably just Mercedes, isn't it, that Perez hasn't driven for? Because he's obviously came through the Ferrari Young Driver Programme, so yeah. I guess he got a practice for them.
Sauber,
wasn't it? Sauber. Red Bulls? He hasn't been with the Red Bulls or Toro Rosso.
No. He seems to be a bit of a Nico Hülkenberg, just constantly going around the midfield of...
Tick them all off. That's the best way.
It's a huge year for him next year, though, because if Ocon beats him convincingly, which, if you look at the sort of graph, Ocon is catching up with him and possibly now overtaking him. Where does that leave Perez's career in the next year if Ocon beats him convincingly? I mean, you've got Sainz, even Hülkenberg, you know, if Sainz goes to Renault and beats Hülkenberg, where are their careers going, you know?
Well, they'll probably just hang around. Sort of how Formula One goes, they'll end up at Williams in a few years. It'll be Perez and Hülkenberg at Williams in 2020. There you go, you've heard it here first. I'll put that down as an official prediction for the, you know, episode 500 of the NRF1 podcast or whatever it is. Right, to listen to that podcast in 3 years' time and on all the ones before and since and whichever, you can do that on your podcast player of choice by simply subscribing with a visit to nrf1.uk/pod subscribe, and you'll find your link there. Hopefully iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, they are all there. And if it isn't there by some bizarre situation, then let me know. Just send an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com and I'll make sure we get that link sorted. Don't forget, nrf1.uk is our website. We've got blogs, all sorts of stuff on there, and Prediction League updates forthcoming in the next week, I promise you. And don't forget, we also like hearing from you in terms of tweets and social. You can, on nrf1.uk, click on the red button and that will allow you to record your audio, submit it to us, and we can put your voice on this podcast. You can send us your rants, questions, predictions, comments, whatever you want. So that's nrf1.uk. Or, of course, you can record an audio file and send it by email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And also, all our social media channels are ideal for getting your comments, questions and opinions to us. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the handle for all three is @thenrf1.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Right, just a couple of other bits I wanted to touch on. Carl, we'll bring this back from you actually, because you said Sauber basically going to become a Ferrari junior team.
Yes, pretty much.
They've also had some big news. Looks like they're going to have 100 more staff that they're going to employ, and a completely new car in 2018. So are we thinking that that's literally going to be an old Ferrari?
Well, I think there'll be more sort of standardised parts in the Sauber, a bit towards the Haas sort of deal. There's even rumours of Alfa Romeo rebranding the engine as an Alfa Romeo engine. I think maybe Haas probably was the sort of second team, or may Ferrari maybe want to go with that, but I think they wanted to keep more experienced drivers, as in Magnussen and Grosjean. It also didn't help that Giovinazzi has crashed a few times in a Haas so far this year. I suppose maybe Sauber have looked at Haas and gone, well, we're sitting around here at the back sort of building everything ourselves, why not get a bit more help from Ferrari? And obviously Ericsson will stay there because his friends are paying some of the bills, and Ferrari can pay some more bills and get a young driver in. So yeah, shame for Wöhrlein, because I think Wöhrlein will disappear from Formula One. But
he's not done a lot, has he? I mean, as always, has he got the car to show what he can do? But not really done a lot
with those drivers who are at the back of the grid and not a very good car. It takes them to do something special to really show that they have got the skill, the talent to build a team up. If you're that good a driver, you can get a car from the back. So have you tried this, try and work with them to move forward. I don't really mention very much, but Damon Hill in 1997 was with Arrows. You might remember a few good races like the Hungarian Grand Prix,
yes,
for example, where he was leading until his car got stuck in third gear So he limped around and he still finished on the podium. But this might be favouritism, probably is, but for someone who can get, well, I suppose reigning world champion, who can get an awful car like the Arrows up to the front, maybe Furlong can do something a bit magical. With a bit of luck, he could get decent points finish and say, actually, I am this good driver.
Could have some exciting Damon Hill news over the forthcoming weeks, Rich. Just you wait. Just
something of the weekend.
Yeah,
but.
Just you wait. We'll save that for a podcast coming up in future. Keep an eye out. So the other point I did want to mention on this, actually, is Jean Todt also saying, Kyle, that basically the FIA have had no serious inquiries about new teams joining the grid. So this is tricky, isn't it? Because you know, having customer teams and you know, buddy teams, if you like, is great, but you don't want the buddy teams replacing the independent teams. No. Because that's going to make things really awkward. What you want is buddy teams joining whilst keeping some independent teams.
It's really difficult because it's proven with Virgin at the time and Campos / HRT and Caterham. If that,
God bless their souls, yes. Caterham, Norfolk's finest.
If you look back on that, the current status of Formula One and the prize money and stuff, it just doesn't work for a team to come in and try and build everything themselves from scratch and the capital of building, of having the machinery to do it, blah, blah, blah. So that's why the sort of Haas deal worked, because they can get go racing, they can be competitive at the start and then attract drivers, attract sponsors or whatever. But like you say, you don't want to lose a Sauber, but where is Sauber going at the moment? And also they can't get rid of all their machinery and the factory they have and the wind tunnel they have. I mean, what do they do with that? So it's, unless they get backing from, say, a Honda or, you know, maybe a Porsche in the future, or like they did with BMW, you can't really see where they're going. And
so
it's just, it's a real tough sort of situation the FIA are in, really.
It really is. And with Sauber then, are we saying that, you know, these more staff and what have you that's coming in is because they've got that support from Ferrari, the two connected?
Possibly, yeah, unless the Swedish sort of backers are putting more money into it. But even then, you can't really see where they're going, really, and what the point is of. No, there's more of a point because they can help Ferrari and help them move on. But
then I guess also in terms of Haas, if it sounds like Ferrari have gone, oh, you've got your experienced drivers now, we're going to have to get another team to put our young guys in. Does that mean that Haas, in a way, have created a sort of model where they've used a team to help establish themselves, and now actually they're thinking, all right, well, maybe we can evolve to do a little bit more ourselves and have a more of an independent edge? And then that's, you're almost switching the buddy team from Haas to Sauber, in a way, to Ferrari. Obviously, they'll have strong links and what have you, but it's different.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at Haas, a more attractive to possibly an engine supplier. I mean, obviously there's not many around, but they could be attracted to them because they now have a base, and also they've got prize money coming in. They can try and do a bit more themselves.
Could they get more interest from America?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for these new engine rules,
could you get,
yeah, well, you know,
Ford
or
I think Ford. Chevrolet, yeah. There was links with Chevrolet, Ford before, Chevrolet, but I think Ford said they weren't interested in coming in, which I think was a stupid mistake.
Would you enjoy Alfa Romeo being in Formula One? Because that sounds good to me.
I would, yeah. We could get Bugatti back as well. Well, why not get all the really old classics from the pre-Formula One age, when it was, you know, still Grand Prix racing? Get them all back. That'd be great to see.
Jean Todt also had an idea in terms of the halo. Now, the halo is a subject we probably need to discuss very quickly if we can. Teams say they're still short on details for next year. Well, that seems stupid because these guys have got to physically design their car.
Yeah. We're now in mid-September. Cars are being built, designed. Well, you kind of think they, behind the scenes, they have an idea. But yeah, it's a worry. Like, it all seems a bit rushed again. This has been talking about this for 18 months, a bit longer now. It was a similar sort of position last year. We didn't really know, and they said, okay, we'll push it back, and then they pushed it back, but they still waited till July, was it, the news came out? Why can't that be announced in April?
I did notice that the F2 cars have got a halo on, haven't they? So that's all out, and that's interesting. Jean Todt's idea was actually for the championship leader to have a yellow halo, a bit like the yellow jersey or a different colour jersey. So they obviously want ideas to spice this up. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. Because I saw one designs on Twitter, I think, of the helmet design being replicated with the halo. That looked quite good, you know, something like that. I'm sure people will think about it long and hard.
Could you have like King of the Mountains or Polka Dot?
Quickest up, Eau Rouge.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
Right, there we are. I think we're done with everything. I think we've covered any other business. Anything anyone has noticed that they want to bring up?
Nope.
It's always nice putting people on the spot. And we've already spoken about the NRF1 Grand Prix, so we're not going to do that anymore. Right, well, you've had all the plugs as well, so we're going to wrap it up. That's podcast one of our three pods in 3 days. You know what's coming up. But before that, let's say goodbye, shall we? Goodbye from Rich.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Kyle.
Goodbye.
It's lovely to see you both. Goodbye from me. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/NRF1. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll be singing Singapore next with our Marina Bay preview. Until then, goodbye!